The most trusted and longest-running sports talk show in Tennessee. From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting, this is Sports Talk with John Wilkerson and Jimmy Hines on Sports Radio WNML.
Number two of Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes along with Vince Ferrara. And before we bring on our new guest, the Pac-12, shockingly, has postponed its season following the Big Ten. So that's out there. We will see what happens with the other three Power Five conferences. But once again, the Pac-12 following the Big Ten's lead, they are not going to play this fall. Pleased to be joined by Rob Lewis of BallQuest.com. He joins us on the Stanley Fenson Gates Hotline. Rob, how are you?
I'm doing well, Jimmy. How are you guys?
We're doing fine. Thanks for joining us. Your reaction to the Big Ten and the Pac-12 shutting it down for football in the fall?
I mean, I'm disappointed to hear that. To see things trending in that direction. You know, at the same time, it's hard to fault anyone however they decide to respond to the concerns over the virus, but just disappointment. I mean, I hate to see that we're going down that road. I was really, really hopeful that things would be encouraging enough to let college football happen. I mean, I'm not convinced that it won't happen here in the South, but to have fragmented at best like it's going to be is certainly not ideal.
Do you think the SEC and ACC would go it alone in football if that's what it came down to?
I mean, as of now, Jimmy, I kind of think that they would. I mean, the ACC came out pretty strongly, I guess, yesterday, and said that they were, proceeding down the path they were currently on to play football. And if anybody's going to do it, it would be the SEC. I think that we could probably all agree on that.
Well, maybe somebody can schedule Nebraska. They want to play somebody.
I've seen rumblings like that too with Ohio State. I mean, I don't think it'll happen immediately. But, I mean, don't you think this could be the – and, again, it's so complicated and complex, but I really think this might be the beginning of the end as far as the Power Five and the NCAA goes.
Could be.
Rob, what about the possibility of transfers from the schools that aren't going to play? I mean, that number is growing now, but there are some pretty prominent players in some of those Big Ten schools. Do you see
– sure, but then – But what do you do with the 85 rule? I mean, that's another example where the NCAA's, interest or policies wouldn't align with the members of the Power Five who may go ahead and play. I mean, that's a whole other backdoor. Does the SEC just get together on its own? It's just a 95 for 1 year or for this recruiting cycle. And you see a mass exodus for the Big Ten and the Pac-12. But I'm sure there are a ton of kids who'll be interested, but there's not enough room there's not close to enough room for everybody that wants to leave that conference if they, to play the SEC or ACC, if you're talking about the scholarship voters.
Well, and that's one of the things that James Franklin was talking about, and he's like, well, until we get answers on what we can tell these kids and their parents, like, let's hold off on making this decision so we don't just say, we don't know, we'll tell you later, and how those things work, including the spring. How could that work? Don't you think a lot of those kids will just simply choose not to play, at least the ones with NFL aspirations?
Oh, 100%. If you're a rock-solid, NFL prospect who's pretty certain you're going to be drafted, that's no way you're going to play in the spring because of injury concerns and not be able to work out for teams. If everything is back to normal in 6 to 8 months and you're talking about having the draft in the spring like you normally do, why is Justin Fields going to put himself and his winning lottery ticket at risk? That something may happen to him like happened to Tua this last year. I mean, if I'm a kid in that position, there's no way I'm playing. And then furthermore, about the NFL guys, the seniors or the juniors who leave early. You're gonna ask kids to play basically 24 college football games in what, 10 months?
Yep.
You know, if you're coming back and playing again next fall, I don't think that's an answer.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. I would be surprised. Well, I do want to ask you this. As far as saying several players would likely opt out and so forth, were you surprised that Trey Smith indicated to ESPN that he would want to play, that it's worth the risk?
No, I'm not surprised, Jimmy. Haven't been around that kid. But I don't know if his feeling would be different the spring. Did he actually say that he would play in the spring?
No, he was talking about the fall.
Okay, that's what I thought. Think. That's what I thought. I read the article, and I thought he was just talking about playing, you know, was on the bandwagon for playing right now. But I bet you he might feel differently if he's a first-round, you know, draft prospect in the spring.
Yeah. I just thought with his blood clot issues, I wasn't sure he would come back to play. I know he's got a lot to prove, but anyway, good for Tennessee if he is able to come back. I do want to ask you about a basketball player, Brandon Huntley Hatfield. He's a 6'9 power forward, rated by some of the number one power forward in the country, a native of Clarksville, Tennessee, played at IMG Academy. Now he's headed to Scotland Academy in Pennsylvania. What do you know about Huntley Hatfield?
Really good player. Played with Jaden Springer this past year at IMG, as you mentioned. Plays with Bobby Mays' AAU team, so played with Springer in that program as well. Has played with Catholics, B.J. Edwards, and a guy at Tennessee is recruiting aggressively. A lot of people think that Kentucky is the team to beat. He's cousins with Alex Porthress. He played there several years ago. He was also from Clarksville. You know, Huntley has never come out and said anything along those lines. Like, he's that Kentucky is the firm leader. I think a lot of people are going to be involved. He's a top five national prospect, a McDonald's All-American type kid. He's, he's not this good, but I'm saying he's a player in the mold of someone like Kevin Durant. I'm not trying to hype him up and say he's that good right now, but he's a 6'10 guy that handles the ball, can play on the perimeter, shoots it well, has a really good mid-range game, and he's 2022 class right now. Mm-hmm. There has been some noise that he may reclassify into 2021. It's getting kind of late in the game if he's going to do that. And as you mentioned, he already has transferred prep schools, and it looks like he's headed to Pennsylvania. Now, again, it's not saying that he couldn't change his mind. And if he did, that would be, you know, another top 10 prospect that Tennessee was in on this class. Right now, I mean, I would throw Tennessee in there with Auburn, probably North Carolina. But if he stays in the 2022 class, Jimmy, he's going to have everybody after him. He is a really, really good player, very polished, very skilled.
Yeah, and so how many years was he at IMG Academy after Clarksville? Was he there 1 year or more? Do you know?
He was there just last year, I believe. I could be mistaken on that, but I think he just went there his sophomore year.
Yeah, and Tennessee's right in the thick of it. Boy, that would be fantastic if Tennessee was able to land that guy.
Yeah, he is a really good player. Rivals, we have him ranked number 5 in the country, and he's certainly got the kind of he won't get the number 1 in that class because of Amone Bates, who's one of the best prospects he's come down the pike in a long time. But I can see him going up, you know, even another couple spots. He's just that. You just don't see that many kids his size with that kind of skill.
Rob, any other decisions that are known around the corner for any of those other Tennessee targets in basketball?
You continue to pick up all these rumors that Kennedy Chandler, the point guard prospect in Memphis, he's the 10th ranked player in the country, the top rated point guard. There's a lot of smoke out there because he's, you know, on the verge of pulling the trigger to Tennessee. Both Kennedy and his father, in talking with some of our rivals, national recruiting analysts, have denied that, indicating that they're waiting to see, hoping that that period on recruiting gets lifted, hoping they can take some visits. I kind of have to take their comments at face value and believe that they're not on the verge of doing something. With that said, it does very much feel like Tennessee is in the driver's seat right there. He's got Kentucky, he's got Duke, North Carolina, and hometown Memphis. there in his top five, but it really feels like Tennessee's the clear-cut leader right now for Chandler. But I don't have any firm indication that he's on the verge of pulling the trigger.
What do you think about the college basketball season? Do you think that we're headed down a similar path of last-minute drama on scheduling, conference only, whether to have seasons, who shuts down? Do you think this is going to transfer into the college basketball season as well?
Yeah, I think the uncertainty is going to linger. Now, you know, hopefully we know quite a bit more, and hopefully things are trending in a different direction by the time November rolls around. But my personal opinion has been that they would, assuming they'll watch what football does. But I think it's a little bit of a different animal because you're talking about being inside, which by all accounts is more of an at-risk situation. And also, you've got a lot more travel involved when you're talking about basketball and the number of games. My initial inclination was that they would hold off and do maybe a conference-only deal starting after the new year. But, I've talked to some people around Tennessee's program, they seem optimistic that things are that the schedule. Not necessarily fans in the stands and all that, but they seem optimistic that the schedule is going to go off as planned. I'm a little skeptical myself, but people that are closer to the situation than I am are optimistic.
I guess Rob Lewis, VolQuest.com. When we come back, we'll get his take on Tennessee's additional two football opponents that the SEC announced on Friday evening. With Vince Ferrara, I'm Jimmy Himes. Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.
From the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
This is Sports Radio WNML.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Ferrara. Our guest is Rob Lewis, VolQuest.com. Rob, I do want to ask you about this. Tennessee will be playing Auburn and Texas A&M. Your thoughts on those two opponents added to Tennessee's schedule?
Oh, wow, Jim. First off, it's a tough draw for Tennessee. Neither one of those teams are probably top 10 caliber, but I think they're certainly top 20 teams. Both of them bring back experienced quarterback in Bo Nix and Kellen Mond. I'm doing some reading up on them over the weekend. I think they both have big question marks with their offensive lines. That's probably something in Tennessee's favor, looking back what they do on defense. And, A&M was really young last year. I think they'll be a lot better. I think they had six or seven freshmen that started. But, to me, the bigger story with that, as Tennessee got, was who LSU, Alabama, and Georgia got. It really looked like a farce. Or with what the SEC did, given Alabama, Kentucky, and Missouri, LSU got Missouri and Vanderbilt, and Georgia got Mississippi State and Arkansas. I mean, they got all passes. Again, Tennessee, they're not playing a top 10 or top 5 team. They didn't get a patsy. And there are a lot of other programs in the SEC, I'm sure, that were upset about it. If I was Jeremy Pruitt, I would be absolutely furious. Now, I think it's going to end up probably not mattering with what we've seen from the Big Ten to the Pac-12, because I think only a fool would suggest that the SEC didn't try to rig it so that their best teams had the smoothest pass to a playoff. If there was one now, who knows what you do in that situation if you only have two or three major conferences played. But I thought it was really comical that it seemed so transparent that they were trying to bolster the chance that they could get two teams into the playoffs and get more money in the conference.
Let's go to the phones where Alan is our next caller. Alan, you're on with Rob Lewis.
Hey, guys. I feel like singing the theme to Hee-Haw, Gloom, Despair, and Agony. you guys talked about it a little. I want to comment on medical experts in a second, but would you all put any odds on SEC, ACC playing and the others not, regardless of the Big 12, I guess.
Gosh, got a statistician asking me a percentage question. My goodness. I don't know. I guess if the other three conferences say no, do I think the SEC and ACC would go alone? I think it's possible. I don't know how to put a percentage on it. How about less than 50%? Is that good enough?
That's good enough. Well, I just, you know, it would be, I mean, you know, I predicted all along that we weren't going to play or we'd start right. and not finish, but not that I didn't want us to, but it would be interesting to have a couple of conferences give it a go, for a just from a learning standpoint, you know, assuming you could reasonably say you weren't putting people at risk, which I think you probably can, even though I'm going to disagree with the ACC medical expert here in a second. But at least we'd learn something. I hope if everything gets canceled to the spring, I hope we do, you know, they get to practice some in the fall, maybe scrimmage, try some things out, you know, just to learn. Because I don't think, you know, we're not going to, unless we get a vaccine, we're not going to be a whole lot better in the spring. And so if we haven't learned anything or whatever, you know, who knows. But anyway, my comment on medical experts, I wouldn't be telling you anything you didn't know if I said you can always find an expert on both sides of an issue, right? Mm-hmm. Go in any courtroom or whatever. And I will say this, doctors are about the least scientific people I know. They study a lot of science, but they don't study necessarily the scientific method of forming hypotheses and analyzing data. But anyway, here's what the guy said. We believe we can mitigate risk down to a level that makes everyone safe. So we believe it. He didn't offer any reasoning or whatever. Will it be tough? Yes. Expensive and hard and lots of work, for sure. And I think that's probably the issue. Is you're going to go to a lot of expense, a lot of hard work, and you've got probably very, you know, low probability of success. But this part got me. I do believe you can mitigate risk that will bring the level down that's no different than living as a student on campus. Now, so I got a student and I got a student athlete. The student part theoretically does all the same things. The athlete goes out on a field and butts head with other students, and then once a week goes out on a field and butts heads with other students from other schools, and somehow that's not riskier than just being a student. That, you know, I can think of some ways they could justify that. They would have to treat the athletes very special. For instance, they're probably going to give athletes more testing than students. Which probably brings up an interesting discussion. You know, we know pro athletes do that, and their argument is they're paying a company more money than the medical system would pay them to do tests that they wouldn't do otherwise. So we're not taking tests away from anyone else. But I don't know if that's true or not. Let's say it is. But, you know, if you say we're going to make tests available to our athletes, but not to our students, I wonder if those weren't some of the discussions the Big Ten presidents had to have about how this whole dang thing would work. It is complicated, and I think there was a caller on Eric's show, must be a regular caller, I forgot his name, maybe Terry, Big Ten fan. But he said, you know, these are tough decisions. Let's don't dog them too bad, regardless of what way they go, and I guess I'd have to probably agree with that. So anyway, I just rambled. So I don't know if you got any comments.
Yeah, Alan. I mean, you bring up a point that, or at least touched on a point that I think is my biggest kind of issue with the whole all this cancellation stuff. You know, how are college presidents, justifying bringing back tens of thousands of students to campus and having them live in dorm rooms and be around each other, but you can't play a football game even. If you don't have anybody in the stands, that to me is just it's the incongruity there is indefensible. And I mean, I just moved a freshman into the dorms on campus this week, and I don't have a lot of concerns about him, you know, his vulnerability. And like Alan said, I wouldn't have a lot of concerns about the you know, the athletes that we're talking about canceling their season.
Alan, we appreciate it. Thanks for the call.
Well, there was a lot that the caller touched on. So go ahead, Rob.
I was just going to say, that to me is my biggest issue with the whole thing. How are universities justifying bringing tens of thousands of students back, but it's too dangerous? You know, that's not too dangerous to have them all living, you know, on top of each other, in, you know, multi-story dorm rooms, walking crowded hallways. You know, cafeterias are open, but you can't play a football game. That to me reeks of universities realizing that if they don't do that, that the financial impact from not having, you know, people paying room and board would be crippling.
I do agree with that, Rob, and I certainly want football also. The one thing I would say to that is, if for you to have the football games, you're now going to have much more than just the players, right? You're going to have staff. You're going to have, if you do try to have limited fans in the stands, now you have, you know, older staff there that work there, the events.
Just,
so
just as you do to run a campus. Physical plant, janitorial, custodial services, professors,
that's
cafeteria workers.
Fair point.
It's no different. Yep. University yep. police?
No. Absolutely. No, that's a fair point. And, you know, the caller also mentioned the fact that, there would be the variation of different medical experts. So, you know, obviously there is going to be different ones. Doctors aren't absolutes. So they don't tell anyone absolutes. They always kind of leave the window open. And they don't say this is going to do 100%. They always kind of leave that window open. So that's not their nature. So the medical experts we hear, that's why they don't take a hard line stance, because you just don't know, especially with something brand new. Real quick, Rob, I want to get your reaction to this, because I just read the Pac-12's release, and in that, in the title, and they just say it in, the Pac-12 conference postpones all sport competitions through the end of the calendar year. They're not saying fall sports like the Big Ten did. It's all sport competitions, which would include basketball. What's your reaction to that? Because the basketball season.
I'm surprised they pulled the trigger. I'm surprised they pulled the trigger on that this far in front of the season started. You know, almost 3 months. I think that's hasty. I think that's an overreaction, and it automatically just throws everything else when you're talking about the NCAA basketball into, you know, just kind of turmoil. I mean, so what? If other leagues don't follow suit, what does that do to the NCAA tournament? How do you look at a Pac-12 team and judge their resume if they have no non-conference schedule? If they only play in conference, and only play 18 to 20 games. It's that really surprises me that they jumped the gun and did that so early.
I just saw where the Big Ten has postponed all fall sports and will only play conference games when they resume in January. That's out there right now. So Pac-12 joins the Big Ten in postponing all fall sports.
The Pac-12 release says all sport competitions through the end of the calendar year. It doesn't say fall sports.
Well, but I'm saying that I just read a story that said the Big Ten is playing conference games only starting in January.
Okay, gotcha.
So, anyway, that's – I can't verify that story, but I just read it, so who knows? Goodness. All right.
Way too early to be making that kind of call.
I agree completely. Hey, Rob, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it, and have a great rest of the day.
Thanks, guys.
See you, Rob. Rob Lewis, FallQuest.com. When we come back, we'll be joined by Kevin Skarbinski, Sports Media Group. And by the way, Rob joining us on the Stanley Fence and Gates Hotline, and so will Kevin Skarbinski. This is Sports Talk 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Hey, I'm Bob for Life, Bobby Scott, and we're counting it down. It's just
46 days until it's football time in Tennessee.
This Sports Radio WNML countdown to kickoff is brought to you by Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Find out more at tvacreditunion.com.
Go Hawks!
Station.
Jimmy Hines along with Vince Ferrara. Pleased to be joined now by Kevin Skarbinski. If you think his last name's hard to spell, how about this? He's a communications consultant. He works with Coach Safely, and he's a freelance sports writer. Did I get that right, Kevin?
You're 3 for 3, Jimmy.
All right. Kevin, how are you doing?
Well, I'm saddened, obviously. It's a sad day in the sports world. It's certainly a sad day in the college football world for those of us who care about the sport to see what transpired today with the Big Ten and the Pac-12 shutting you down for the fall. There are no winners here. There just aren't.
Well, and I also read where the Pac-12 and the Big Ten have canceled all sports through the end of the calendar year, which includes men's basketball. So that's gone by at least through the end of the year. But I did see where the Big 12 is going to play conference games only starting in January in basketball. Nick Saban said that the players are safer on campus than they would be being dispersed back to their home areas. Do you agree with that? That argument didn't carry any weight with the two conferences, but do you agree with Saban's position?
No, that argument didn't work, but I do tend to agree with Nick Saban on that point, and he's not the only one who's made it. Obviously, I'm not a doctor, but like many of us, I've done a lot of research on this, and I've talked to a lot of people about it, and it just makes sense to me because we know the great lengths that college football teams have gone to protect their athletes, to keep them as safe as possible since they've been back on campus in the summer. We also know that once they get out of that environment, onto campus, into classrooms, out in the community, that just, again, common sense tells you they won't be as safe, that not everyone, we see it in our daily lives. If you go to the grocery store or if you go to a restaurant, not everyone is following the physical distancing guidelines. Not everyone is wearing masks. Not everyone is doing everything possible to try to halt the spread of this terrible virus. So, it just makes sense that they would be safer in that environment. And here's the contradiction that I would like to hear someone address from either the Big Ten or the Pac-12, because many of those schools are opening their campuses. They are having in-person instruction in classrooms. How can you do that? How can you say that is safe, but playing college football is not? That there's a fundamental contradiction there to me that doesn't really fly.
Do you think that we will see a lot of players enter the transfer portal?
Well, it depends what, you know, if the SEC and the ACC, and I don't know in the last few minutes if we've heard from the Big 12, but certainly it seems the SEC and the ACC aren't jumping along with the Big 10 and Pac-12 just yet anyway. They may eventually go that way. But if they play football in those two conferences in the South, and if you're a young man at Ohio State or Nebraska, and you have the opportunity to go play elsewhere and play immediately, that's going to be the big question. What is the NCAA Board of Governors going to do in terms of eligibility? Are they going to restore that year of eligibility for the young men in those conferences who are not able to play? There are so many unanswered questions that players are scratching their heads about, that are very frustrated about. And I think they've got to answer a lot of questions very quickly. And I'll go back to this, Jimmy. What have they been doing since March? All of these contingencies could have been planned for, laid out, prepared for, and a set of guidelines issued for each possibility to play a reduced schedule in the fall, to not play in the fall, try to play in the spring. What does it mean for eligibility? What does it mean for transfer rules? They should have already decided those things in the eventuality that they had to make the decision that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 felt compelled to make today.
Kevin, so many interesting things that I would love to follow up on that you mentioned. I'll mention this. It sounds like a lot of the student-athletes aren't going to be sent home to these universities. So if you're talking about off-season, then when they're not required to be on in your facility – then yeah, the home thing would come into play. But it sounds like they're still going to allow them to get tested and use the facility. Other than that, they'll be on campus with everyone else. So what is the problem? Is it the actual that they're fearing of? Is it the actual football aspect of it that could put them at higher risk during games? Is it travel? Or is it something beyond that, like litigation or something else?
Well, I'm sure there are multiple factors there, Vince, and the prospect of litigation and liability certainly has to factor into that decision. We've heard a lot of news since the weekend about potential cardiac complications from contracting COVID-19. That certainly would be something that would factor in. I saw a report, I think The Athletic is reporting, that the Big Ten is aware of perhaps 10 cases of football players who contracted COVID-19 who may have cardiac issues. And obviously no one wants that, of course. And when you play football, obviously you're in close quarters and you're in danger of spreading germs, a virus, what have you. So, I'm sure there are multiple factors that are going into this. I wish they would be more transparent. I wish the people making these decisions could give us more data. If they're basing their decisions on data, share the data. It should be public data. And why is it, as you said, Vince, and this is the question that I have and many people have, why is it safe to have those athletes on campus but not safe to have them playing football?
Yeah, and you actually went right where I was going to ask you, and that's the transparency. This isn't anything new for college athletics, and this is what they do, regardless of whether you're talking about safety or something that's a positive or a concern. Maybe be more transparent with the kids in expressing themselves throughout with their leadership councils that, hey, we do feel safe, here's why. None of that really has happened during this process, but that's typical of college athletics, right?
Well, it is, and what should have been done, again, back in the spring was, instead of waiting till now to appear to be listening to your athletes, they should have been talking to college football players back in March and April when, yep, college basketball got shut down, college baseball got shut down. We lost the SEC basketball tournament, the SEC baseball tournament, countless other spring sports. And obviously this was, despite some mistaken statements from public officials, this was not going to just go away. So you had to deal with different contingencies for the fall that might affect college football. So there should have been serious conversations with the student athletes. What were their concerns about health and safety? What did they want to see in place in terms of guidelines and protocols? Their input should have been sought significantly in the spring, as the alleged leaders of college athletics were looking forward towards this academic year and what effect this virus could have on everyone's cash cow, and that's college football.
Our guest, Kevin Skarbinski, we're listening to him on the Stanley Fenton Gates Hotline. By the way, Dennis Dodd with CBS Sports says that at least 15 Big Ten players got myocarditis through getting COVID-19. So he had it at least 15. Kevin,
yeah,
if
that's the condition that I saw that the Athletic tweeted out, and they used the number of 10. So, and if that is the case, that shouldn't come from excellent reporting. I mean, yes, it's great that it's coming from excellent reporting, but it should come from the conference. It should come from the schools. You don't have to, and this is something and Vince pointed to this. We run into this, and every day when you're trying to get information out of college athletic programs, they hide behind privacy laws. You don't have to identify the individuals.
That's right.
You can use numbers to share information. And this would be we've never had a greater need for transparency than now, because this is a public health issue. It is not a private issue. It's a public health issue that involves not just college football players, but college students and the general population, their families, the people they go back to in their communities. they owe it to all of us to share the information that they're learning regarding this disease.
Tennessee will not share its numbers on how many have tested positive. Kevin, I did want to go back to this. The SEC announcing Friday evening the schedule, the next two opponents. It appears as though the better teams in the league might have caught a break in terms of the scheduling. How do you
Shocker.
See what the SEC...
Shocking. I'm shocked.
I know.
I'm shocked to hear there's gambling going on in Rick's.
Keep your seat now.
Here you're winning, sir.
your thoughts on what the SEC did.
If I'm Sam Pittman at Arkansas, I'm looking around to see if they've added Ohio State and Nebraska to their schedule after what happened today. They certainly didn't do him any favors, or Eli Drinkwitz, the new coach of Missouri. It's easy to joke and to come up with a conspiracy theory that, and one of the favorite ones, of course, is that the SEC office, because it is just an hour down the road from Tuscaloosa, that they take care of the Crimson Tide in many, many cases. I'm sure that they did everything they could. I'm hoping they did everything they could to make it as balanced as possible. But it's never fully balanced, and you can never completely balance the schedule. You can never count on year to year who's going to step up and have an incredible year that you weren't expecting, or who's going to have a down year that you weren't expecting. So it's an impossible task to try to balance that out. But on the surface, it does appear that the teams most likely, or the teams expected to compete for the SEC championship, and who knows if we'll even have a college football playoff now, but the teams that were expected to compete for berths in that playoff may have gotten a bit of a break.
Do you think that the SEC and ACC would play football this fall if the other three Power Five conferences say no?
That's a hard question. Greg Sankey, it's interesting that Greg Sankey's been so available to the media, at least the national media, in the last couple of days. And I don't know if it was on Good Morning America or the Dan Patrick Show. He discouraged the idea that the SEC would go it alone, that if the other four power conferences decided not to play, that the SEC would say, no, as long as our medical experts advise us that we can do this safely, then we're going to play. So he kind of threw cold water on that idea. I think they would need some partners, and the ACC is the most likely. The Big 12, it seems like, and I don't know how much validity there is to this, that everyone is looking towards the Big 12 to break the tie, if you will. We already have two that have shut down. We've got two in the SEC and the ACC that seem especially determined to play if they can do it by terms that they deem safe. So what is the Big 12 going to do? If three out of five decide to play, it makes it a lot easier than, I think, for them to justify it than it does if only two out of five decide to play.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Kevin, thank you so much. Great of you to join us. We really appreciate it. And as I mentioned before to somebody else, next time we talk, I hope it's about football games.
I hope so, too. Now I'm worried about basketball, Jimmy. Let's keep our fingers crossed.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see where that one goes, too. Thanks, Kevin.
All right. Take care, guys.
See you, Kevin.
Kevin Skarbinski, a great sports writer, Coach Safely. He's involved with that. He's a freelance writer and also communications consultant. When we come back, we'll have more. Sports Talk 99.1 D, Sports Animal.
You ever notice how stations that promote less talk never actually say anything worth hearing in the first place? We talk sports all the time. 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Welcome back to Sports Talk. I'm Jimmy Himes with Vince Ferrar. Vince, Gary Parrish of CBS Sports, we had him on recently, said that college basketball needs to learn from college football, commit to a bubble conferences, and then bubble the NCAA tournament for 2021. That's probably easier said than done, but that's his suggestion at this point.
Yeah, one of the things in the Pac-12 statement in their release, Jimmy, they said in there, quote, unlike professional sports, college sports cannot operate in a bubble. Now, I'd love to hear a full non-political release statement reasoning for it, just a real discussion about it, because they won't go down the route of amateurism, and that they don't want that to take place. And if you were to do that kind of situation, you would be walking down that road. So, I think that's what it's all about. Looking forward to talking to Dan Lust, attorney and sports legal analyst, in that final hour, Jimmy, because there's so many of these aspects that involve litigation, liability, amateurism, a lot of these things that we can get some legal perspective from him and ask him about it. But it is really, really, really complicated. But now it's starting to seep into the basketball season as well. So I think obviously the bubbles have worked, Jimmy, but I really don't see them being able to pull that off, not for college athletics.
I agree. When we come back, we'll be joined by Mike Keith of the Tennessee Titans. He loves college football. We'll get his take about what's going on out there, as well as the potential for fans in the stands for NFL games. With Vince Ferrar, I'm Jimmy Himes. Sports Talk 99.1, the Sports Animal.